The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
So I guess we'll start. First of all, I apologize, you all. The whole class was supposed to get an intro to say this was happening today. I saw the email, so I don't know how it didn't go out to you all. I would take the blame, but I'm not taking the blame for this particular one. But But the idea is, so a couple of years ago, the faculty sort of recognized that we have a just voluminous curriculum, you know, lots of students. There are, although the job market is not what we would like it to be, there are a lot of opportunities in the DC area and more broadly. And we started to think about how best to help you all sort of navigate the process from here to there. How do you figure out, you know, what your interests are, how to specialize your what classes you take so that you have a coherent package that you're selling when you go sell yourself on the job market, et cetera. So the two things that we did along those lines are, first of all, to develop pathways. So we have a website that is pathways.wcl.american.edu. And in your intro sessions, just 15 minutes ago, you should have seen what that looks like. Basically, you can click on the area that interests you, and each of the different program areas has developed a set of classes that we sort of recommend as the core classes for you to take, and then a sampling of other classes that we suggest that you take. All right, good. Come back. That's Professor Hunter.
I think that's our office.
Great. And most important, perhaps, from that list is on the pathway, if you click on the business pathway, if you click on the environmental pathway. Excellent. There should be a list also of all of the professors who teach in that subject area. Take advantage of us. Absolutely. Go to those professors' office hours. Ask the professors, you know, what classes they recommend you take. Ask them if they have particular connections to government agencies, law firms, in our case, environmental NGOs, et cetera, because we all have connections in the outside world, and we can help you make those connections. We can help you make sense of a NGO's website, for example. Do they or do they not do the kind of work you might be interested in doing, et cetera. So take advantage of us. So that's the kind of information that's available on the Pathways site. Help you start to think about what classes to take next year and which professors to go talk to. Separately, we also organized ourselves into faculty practice groups. They're sort of loosely organized. So our group includes environmental law, energy law, but also some interests that students sometimes have, but that aren't sort of where we don't have a whole program, like real estate law, construction law, land use, that kind of stuff. It's all sort of under our group. And the idea of the faculty practice groups is to do a better job both sort of advising you all about what pathway to take through the curriculum, where to look for jobs, et cetera, but also to better integrate you with our alumni and sort of friends of the environmental law program in the DC area. So to help acquaint you with who your faculty are, who can help you out, but also, and perhaps more importantly, with the alums who are really, you know, excited about seeing WCL students' resumes and hiring you all. And so the faculty practice groups are doing a lot of programming in each of the areas to try to accomplish those purposes. So in a minute, I'll tell you about the programs that we have available for the spring. But before we do that, I just want to run through quickly and tell you about the four main professors in the area. So I'm the head of the faculty practice group, but the head of the environmental law program overall is Professor Hunter. He just stuck his head in, and he'll be back. He also is the head of the international law faculty practice group, so he sort of wears two hats. He has practiced in the area of international environmental law for years. He still has a close connection with a lot of NGOs and with the World Bank that do international environmental law. He still does a lot of research and sort of on-the-ground work in that area. And he has really shaped the international environmental law aspect of our curriculum. So if you think you have any interest in international environmental law, he's your sort of first go-to person. For sometimes as a 1L, it's hard to know what is meant by international law. So this isn't just sort of environmental law that happens to be practiced in other countries. This is the environmental law that governs relationships among countries, governs the oceans, governs areas of land that aren't owned by any particular country, et cetera. Professor Hunter also teaches a class called comparative environmental law, which looks at the environmental law of particular countries. So it compares the domestic environmental law of a couple of different countries. Do you know what countries he usually focuses on?
A lot of them. I mean, okay. I think within like the first class, you read like the various constitutional provisions of like 100 countries, because like lots of other countries, not ours, has the right to a healthy environment or something related to that in their constitution, and so you read that.
Great.
And then normally, you sometimes do research focused on one or two countries that either he chooses or that's based. A lot of LLMs take the class, or a lot of international students take the class, and so sometimes it's based on like who's in the class, and so like looking at different ones of like the students in the class in addition to other countries that are maybe doing new things or developing their laws or something.
Got it. So that's Professor Hunter. I focus more on domestic environmental law, and the specific area that interests me within that is pollution regulation as opposed to land use, although I know something about land use as well. I teach the 1L survey environmental class, as some of you know, and I tend to try to keep my hand in by writing amicus briefs and things like that in domestic environmental law cases. So if you're interested in working on U.S. environmental law, I have a lot of connections and suggestions I can give you. Professor, sorry to leave you for last, Erica, but Professor Snape is the head of the adjunct program for the whole law school, which is a huge advantage to the environmental program because we can sort of sneak our adjuncts through, but also teaches in the environmental law curriculum and teaches a climate change in the law class, and generally, this semester he actually has somebody else doing it for him, but generally he also teaches our externship class, which is a great, great opportunity. If you do nothing else in the environmental law program, I recommend that. It's a spring class, and it gives you the sort of externship credits for work that you do outside the school at environmental NGOs. Can be across the aisle. It doesn't matter, you know, what flavor of environmentalist you are. We've had students working at the American Petroleum Institute, students working at environmental NGOs, students working for the federal government, et cetera. And so he is the, he runs the externship program, and part of what that means is that he can help you find those externships, find the placements that you would use for the externship class. All right, last but absolutely not least is Erica Lennon, who is a professor in the program and also an alum, and so sort of has the closest ties to the, and probably the best insights about the questions that are running through your heads right now, and I will let you introduce yourself.
So I'm the program coordinator for the environmental law program. That's my normal job. I'm also a professor, but I teach research and writing to the international students, which is a condensed version of your legal rhetoric class in one semester. I do all sorts of different things. My main research and focus tends to be on international environmental law issues. I work a lot on World Bank issues related to environmental and social safeguards. We're starting a project on Chinese investment and their environmental laws about Chinese investment. Focusing primarily on Latin America right now. I did a lot of research on the Arctic. Very interested in the Arctic and Arctic governance issues. So mainly international, I've done some domestic. And that's sort of my research. And then, yeah, I help run the environmental law program, so I generally know what events are going on. I maintain our alumni database.
So really,
I send out emails.
I'm going to jump in and say, really, Erica's the brains behind the operation. So whenever you have any questions about when a program is, where a program is, where you should work, what you should do with your life, start with Erica. I mean, I'm more than happy to talk to you, but I know a lot less than she does. So
I also tend to know who you should talk to if you're interested in a different thing. I went here, so I got my JD here. I graduated in 2008. Professor Leiter wasn't here, but Professor Snape and Hunter were here, as were many of our other adjuncts and full-time faculty.
So she knows our alums. She maintains our alumni database. She knows where they all are. She's kept track of them all. She's good friends with many of them. So she's a great resource. So keep track of her and often start with her with whatever your question is. Okay, as far as programming for the spring, I thought I'm happy to take your questions, but I thought maybe the first thing I would do, the first thing I would do is just run through what we have on tap for the spring. So the first thing is from February 6th to 8th, the school is going to, let me back up and say one thing first. There are, in addition to the faculty practice group, which you should be sure you get your name signed up for, and there is going to be an email sent, it was supposed to have already been sent, with a link to how you sign up for the faculty practice groups. But even if you never hear another word about that from anybody, if you email Erica, she will get you on the environmental faculty practice group. So even if the whole rest of the school crumbles around us, this will continue to function. All right, so the first thing is the faculty practice group. The second is there's an environmental law society, which is ELS at wcl.american.edu. Separately, get yourself on the ELS list. Almost everything that goes to the faculty practice group also goes to the ELS list. But ELS is a student group. They do their own programming, often coordinated with the faculty practice group, but not entirely. They run hikes, they run service projects, river cleanups, things like that. They offer leadership opportunities later in your 2L and 3L year. So if you have a great idea for some environmental law programming you'd like to see on campus or energy law programming that isn't happening, get yourself involved with the ELS and you can actually, basically the faculty is happy to support any activity that for which there is student interest. So if you get yourself in a leadership position on ELS, you can make an event happen. You can bring a speaker to campus. You can advocate for a particular new course, et cetera. There is also the Energy Law Society. What is their email address?
Their email address is something very long. It's like energylawsociety@wcl.com.
We will get you their email address in a second. There's an Animal Law Society.
Yeah, I don't know what they're... Do you know what the Animal Law Society email is?
Yeah. Well, we had Puppy Day, first of all. And basically, we just bring awareness to different issues facing animals. We had a pig come in, bring awareness to that. I know we have Founders Day coming up in February. We'll have speakers coming in, something about factory farms, different things like that.
Great. And I will say the Animal Law Society is the single best example that I know of that students can have a real impact on what classes are taught here and what programs are available, because it was the brainchild of a 3L who is still here. She started it with a couple of other students supporting her. She started it my first year here 3 years ago. And advocated for an animal law class that is now being taught, advocated for the creation of the society, it now gets a budget from the SBA, and started organizing all of these events that now happen and are now part of sort of institutional lore, et cetera. So if you're interested in any, you can sign up for all three or for whichever one interests you most, et cetera. The only other student group I think that's worth letting you know about right SDLP. Now is SDLP.
This is the Energy Law email address. I just wrote it up because it is spelled out, Energy Law Society at WCL, and then the at symbol, gmail.com.
SDLP is the Sustainable Development Law and Policy Brief. It's sort of like a journal, but they don't write the big sort of academic theoretical articles. They write more timely, shorter, and more interesting articles. I say that in part because I'm busy writing the other kind that are really not that interesting. But the SDLP articles are sort of timely, sort of current events in environmental law. They'll often take on a particular subject area, renewable energy, and do a whole issue on renewable energy, et cetera. The great thing about SDLP, they do their own programming. So if you're interested in participating on putting a panel together or something like that. SDLP is one way to do that. But they also offered an opportunity for writing and for getting some editing and article selection experience. So as an upper-level student, you will have a writing obligation. You have to do an upper-level writing project. And more generally, as a lawyer, it's really important to have writing on your resume, to have your resume sort of show that you have writing experience, you're a good writer, you like to write, etc. SDLP is a sort of quick and easy way to show that you've been involved with a publication during your time at WCL. You can get involved with that now. You don't have to go through it's not the same as the law reviews, so you don't have to go through a competitive selection process. You can get involved with SDLP now. You can stay involved even if you also get selected for the AU Law Review, for example, or the Administrative Law Review, or SDLP also understands that sometimes people get involved as 1Ls, and then they end up with a lot of obligations on another journal, and they stop being involved with SDLP. So either pathway is acceptable. Did you have a question? Sorry.
I was just going to ask if you can do both the journal and the brief.
You can. So. Absolutely.
A number of people do both the journal and brief. Some do one or the other. The nice thing I would say about SDLP, one, they are accepting applications right now.
Are they SDLP at WCL?
Yeah, they're SDLP at WCL, and their application is up on their website, which I think is wcl.american.edu/org/SDLP. It is linked to from the environmental law website, so if you go to our website, which is wcl.american.edu/environment, and just scroll down the left-hand column, there's a link to SDLP. And I know they're accepting applications now because they just tweeted about it, and I retweeted it. And the other nice thing is that they do some longer articles, and they like get articles written by practitioners and professors and things, and sometimes students. Like, so I wrote one on the Arctic because that was what I was doing research on. But they also do short features for each issue that are like 1,000 to 3,000 words, which are relatively easy to write, that are always on timely issues, and that are always written by members of the SDLP. But it means that you then have a publication on your resume almost immediately. You can write one as a 1L, which is good to have when you're looking for jobs and things like that. So,
and I don't know whether you're getting this advice elsewhere, but I can't emphasize enough how important it is to have your resume reflect that you write well and that you like to write. So one way to have it reflect that you write well is just to make sure that it has no typos, that it looks good on the page, that the sentences are clear and declarative and all that. But another way is to have a publication on the first page of your, or the hopefully only page of your resume. And SDLP gives you that opportunity. Okay, so these are the organizations with the faculty practice group that are planning the events that I was about to list for you. So the first is from February 6th to 8th. We are hosting here, largely thanks to Erica, the Stetson International Environmental Law Moot Court Regional Finals. So this is the North American Finals?
It's the North American Regional.
North American Regional. We will have a team, so WCL is fielding a team, and then schools from across the country have teams, and then the top, how many teams from here move on?
We do, and then the top two teams.
Okay, the top two teams plus WCL gets a pass because we're hosting, so our team also gets to move on, and the finals are going to be at Stetson. Sometimes the finals are in more exotic locations, but in this case the finals are at Stetson, but they're going to be hosting teams from all around the world. They have teams sometimes from India, from China, from
Europe, Ireland,
Africa. So Stetson is a great competition to get involved with. So think about whether you might want to be on a team for next year. We also usually field a team for the PACE National Environmental Law Moot Court Competition, which is domestic environmental law. It's held at PACE Law School every year in February. And it is the largest single moot court competition anywhere in the country in any subject area. So that's a great one to be involved with as well, because you meet students from about 70 other law schools, all of whom send teams, and so it's a great networking opportunity, a great opportunity to interact with domestic environmental law issues. With respect to the specific event, February 6th to 8th, once you're on any one of these listservs, you will be getting an email soliciting your participation as a volunteer, because we're going to be hosting how many teams?
We have 11 this year, and so it's going to be basically all day Saturday in the preliminary rounds, and then Sunday will be the semifinals and finals. But what that means is that at any given time, I have at least 3 rooms going and generally need student volunteers to keep time and be bailiffs and help run scores back and forth, because I'm organizing it and tallying all the scores, and I can't be in all the rooms. So it's fun. It's interesting. You get to see how a moot court competition works. And you also get to meet people. The judges are almost always practitioners. Many of whom are alums, some are who are adjuncts, some are who are professors here. They're all lawyers, and you're the one who's like sort of interacting and making sure like they're okay and stuff like that. And so it's a great way to both meet people from other schools interested in environmental law, to sort of see what moot court's all about if you might want to do it, and then to meet the people who you're in the room with and judges, because you get to talk to them.
Is there there's also usually a happy hour.
Yeah, I think that
where all the judges are invited, and all
I want to say
Saturday
night. That's when we're going to do our reception. That's at least my theoretical plan. It was supposed to, we were going to start on Friday, but I think I've made it so that we can have it all on Saturday and Sunday, which will be easier for teams traveling. So the teams I know are coming from Hawaii, California, the Midwest, North Carolina, Florida, and then we and Trinidad. We almost always have a team from the Caribbean who comes.
Got it. So that's February 6th to 8th, but it sounds like maybe just 7th and 8th. Then on February 10th, the Sustainable Development Law and Policy Brief is hosting their Founders Day event, which is a biodiversity event. Their announcement for it gives the really depressing statistic that according to the World Wildlife Federation, wildlife populations around the globe have decreased 40% since 1970. So this is the flip side of the climate change problem that you hear a lot about. You hear a lot about it from the climate angle and from the angle of what the impacts on the human population will be. But the impacts on biodiversity worldwide are already astounding and pretty devastating. And so their event is going to talk about why that is and what potential responses might be. They haven't yet announced who the speakers will be, but it's going to be a lunch panel on February 10th. So at very least, think about attending, but you can also think about getting involved if you're interested ahead of time. February 24th, I gather, do you want to tell us about the animal law event? I know there's the Founders Day event for the Animal Law Society is February 24th, but I don't know exactly what it's going to be.
They're still shoring up some of the details, but I know they have someone involved with factory farm, mm-hmm. and like investigating stuff like that, having someone come to speak to that.
Great.
I think they'll also have, they're thinking of having someone, I think, in the morning and afternoon, so I don't know if they've completely figured it out.
Got it. So factory farms are a huge issue in both animal law and environmental law. From the animal law side, it's not so much fun to be an animal on a factory farm. From the environmental side, factory farms are one of the biggest sources of some air pollution, but also the biggest problem is the water pollution. That factory farms generate a huge amount of nutrients, et cetera, from animal waste, and that's one of the factors that is thought to be most responsible for the large dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. I don't know how many of you have heard about that, but now at the mouth of the Mississippi River, there is a hundreds of square miles dead zone that appears every summer because so many nutrients come down the Mississippi River. They generate an algal bloom as soon as the temperatures and sunlight is right. The algae blooms, covers the surface, dies, and falls to the bottom, and as the algae die and decompose, basically they pull all the oxygen out of the water column, and so almost all the other animals and plants in the area die. So interesting set of topics around factory farming. So that's February 24th. March 3rd is the Environmental Law Society's Founders Day event. And theirs this year is going to be on federal public lands. So at least in the West, I don't know the exact statistic for the U.S. as a whole, but in the West, 70% of the land is actually owned by the federal government, owned and managed by the federal government in a lot of different ways. Forests, wilderness areas, national parks, but also a factor that a lot of people don't think about, the Department of Defense owns a vast amount of that land. So land management issues that arise, leasing to mineral and oil and gas companies on federal public lands, and how pollution from those enterprises should be controlled on federal public lands, grazing fees, everything along those lines. So that's March 3rd.
I think they're also talking about offshore.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I
think in at least their description, yeah, there was
offshore oil and gas.
Offshore oil and gas.
Okay.
Leasing.
Off, like,
yeah.
Great. Both sides of that.
Yeah.
And just to reiterate, for each of these things, if the topic this year doesn't interest you, get involved with one of these organizations, because these are just topics that the students in the particular organization were interested in and picked, and they're the ones who are identifying the speakers and inviting the speakers. Faculty are always available to help suggest people, and we have connections to people, but these are really very much student-run events. So if there's some set of topics that particularly interests you that isn't well represented this year, just get involved, and you can make it be the topics for next year. Okay, last but not least is what the faculty practice group is doing tentatively, and we'll get the news out to you later when it's more definitive, but tentatively on March 23rd, we're going to host a resume and cover letter review, and also happy hour with alumni from the area who are working in environmental or energy law. We have a huge number of alums in the area who are working across the spectrum. So there are a lot at private firms in the area. We have a great guy who's high up in the energy department, someone who's high up in the Department of the Environment in the DC government, someone who's quite a few people working at different NGOs in the DC area, people at the Justice Department, a lot of people at EPA, actually. I went in the fall, I took some students to an Environmental Appeals Board hearing at EPA, so an internal appeal, essentially, at the agency. One of the litigators was a WCL alum, one of the judges was a WCL alum, and there were four or five WCL alums in the audience, all because they were involved with the parties in some way or other. So we're very well represented in the environmental community in the DC area. And that's a network that you really just have to take advantage of in this employment climate. So it's an opportunity to come and meet those people. And then we will also, the way we usually run it is that students sign up ahead of time and we pair you either with a professor or an alum. And you get to sit down with that person for a half an hour. They look at your resume, give you suggestions on your resume, but also suggestions about where you should be sending your resume, suggestions on your cover letter, and then we'll have a sort of a happy hour after it, so that in addition to whomever you met with for the half hour, you can also meet all the other alums who are in attendance. So I think that's all I have. Do you have anything you want to add?
I just thought of something, and now maybe I forgot it. What I would say, in addition to the fact that, so that's all this semester, in the fall generally, so next fall, we do an alumni happy hour with alumni and students. And that's with everyone generally in the DC area. What I would say is, if you're interested in not being in the DC area, but doing something related to environment, etc., let us know. There are a lot of our alumni who are working abroad and working in California or working in Colorado or somewhere elsewhere, and so if you tell me, like, this is what I want to do, most of our alumni, if not all, most of our alumni are pretty happy to help and meet with students. Like, for example, I got an email from the person who works at the District Department of Environment yesterday saying I need more interns this semester. So that I'm going to send out to the practice group. But I would say, you know, if there are things you're interested in, get in touch with us. I mean, get involved in those societies too, but even if, like, we've had students who've been like, I want to have this person come speak, and generally we can make that happen. Or I want people to speak on this topic. But I can also try and put you in touch with alumni or put you in touch with people even outside of DC who work in the field to the extent that I know them, or that we have alumni there.
So it sounds trite to say, but I can't say it often enough. Sometimes students are sort of stymied by the fact that we have so many
classes that are offered and different faculty members and alums all over the place. And it's sort of like walking into a grocery store. I find for myself, I can't pick what shampoo I want because there are like 700 on the shelf, right? If there was only one, I would just buy that one. So try not to be daunted by all the opportunities there are. Try to take advantage of the, you know, many ways that we've tried to devise to help you navigate. Yeah.
So I do want to say there are so many opportunities, especially this week, because I actually have to run a foreign networking event like right now. But before I go, I wanted to ask a question. I'm part of a lot of ABA like listservs.
Oh, that's great too. Yeah.
And some of them are related to environmental things. And I wanted to know if there is a way for me as a student to maneuver and try and network with those listservs, because a lot of them are attorneys. They're like, oh, there's a conference call, blah, 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 to talk about this. And a lot of times I wonder, should I call in, listen, see what happens? Should I send an email to these people and say, hi, I'm a 1L. I really would like a summer internship. Here's my resume.
So I think, first of all, I think almost any networking that you do, the worst that happens is somebody says no. They almost never, I mean, unless you're really annoying, they almost never sort of file your name away and say, okay, this is a person I'm never going to hire again in the future either, right? So, you know, the email crosses their desk. If they have the time, they read it. If they have a need, they email you back, right? If you emailed them 17 times, then maybe you get on a blacklist. But as long as you're not put on some sort of blacklist, they forget about it, and then the next time round, you know, oh wait, didn't I get an email from that person? Maybe she's available now, right? So really, really, really don't be shy. Really don't, right? I can't help students I haven't met. Come talk to me. Come talk to the other professors. And I think it's great to be involved with the section, the ABA section on environment or energy, the DC Bar section on environment or energy. There's a great organization called the Environmental Law Institute, ELI. Explore their website because they have all sorts of summer programs. So they do a brown bag lunch that is free to students. And they do it, I think, once every other week or once a month. No, it must be once a week.
I put it on my calendar once I get it.
In the summers, it's just open to students who are working in environmental law in the D.C. area. And it's usually an expert talking about some environmental law, pressing energy or environmental law topic. But they also hire for the summers if you want to do environmental law research. They have happy hours to get students acquainted with members of the bar in the D.C. area. So that's another great way to network.
And I would say for the most part, from what I know, the ABA, like the sections on environment and energy, and I work sometimes with the section on international law, committee on international environmental law. They constantly send me things to be like, have students come. And I know for like their big conferences and stuff, they often offer discounted student rates. Sometimes you can get scholarships to go to their annual conferences and stuff. And so I think generally they're pretty willing to have, they want students to participate.
That's really good to hear. Because
as far as I can tell,
yeah.
I don't do much with them, but as far as I can tell, they want students there.
Really sorry.
Yeah. Other questions? Yeah.
I have a question more about like courses. Could you tell me a little bit about the, I think it's annual, it's like a June like seminar program?
Oh, the summer environmental law program?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
So, Erica.
So, I run the summer session on environmental law. Generally, so it basically starts on the day after Memorial Day. So I think this year it's May 26th and runs for 3 or 4 weeks depending on what classes you take. Basically, it's a series of 1 week long classes. There's one exception. Professor Hunter teaches a class on international institutions and environmental protection that is a 3 week class. The nice part about that, it's 2 credits. The nice part about that class is that you go on site visits. And so last year we took people to meet with alumni and lawyers working at Beveridge and Diamond, which is an environmental law firm, the Center for International Environmental Law Lawyers, the World Bank's Inspection Panel, the Compliance Advisor Ombudsman, UNEP, maybe somewhere else that I'm forgetting, but at least those. And then everything else is a 1 credit class. They're all 1 week long. Professor Hunter's class is in the mornings, 10 to 12:30. There's generally 1 or 2 classes offered in the afternoons and 1 or 2 classes offered in the evenings. They're, for the most part, all taught by adjuncts. Many who work here, some who come from abroad, so we have one on human rights and environment in Latin America, and a woman comes up from Mexico to teach it. The topics vary. There are a lot of international ones. We have, this year I think we're going to have environment in the U.S. Congress, environmental compliance and enforcement, international business in the environment, development finance in the environment, international wildlife and biodiversity law, international climate change. I feel like I'm forgetting something. Human rights and environment in Latin America.
Hunter's class.
Hunter's class. Oh, and then we almost always do a class on, and I think we will again, on trade and the environment, which is generally the fourth week. It is all day, every day, that we run with the Organization of American States Department of Sustainable Development. And it's a series of sort of different modules on different aspects of trade and environment law. So you get like 3 or 4 hours on trade, on international trade law, 3 or 4 hours on international environmental law, and then hours on, you know, issues related to IP, issues related to negotiating trade agreements, issues related to negotiating environmental sections of trade agreements. And then the final day of it is a trade negotiation simulation where everyone's assigned a different role. So like you would be the environment minister from the developing country, or you'd be the trade minister from the developed country, and you sort of, or you'd be an NGO, and you sort of negotiate what would be like an environmental chapter of a trade agreement. The one thing I would say, so it's open to both JD and LLM students, and you just enroll like you normally do when you enroll
in classes. All the classes.
All the classes. And then we also generally have about half of it is outside practitioners. So last year, I think we had people from 25 different countries. We had about 25 or 30 people who came who are lawyers or law students working in environmental law from around the world. So last year we had people from the Attorney General's office in Malaysia, Italy, Peru, Brazil, Ecuador. We always have Ecuadorian people from Africa. I think we have people from Morocco, Tanzania. I'm forgetting everywhere else that we had them from, but generally people come from all over, and so you get to meet all of these people from all over. Especially, they almost always take Professor Hunter's class because it's the sort of three-week class that anchors it. And since you're going on like site visits, you generally get to interact with them and create this sort of network of environmental people, not just in DC, not just in the US, but around the world. Sometimes we have outside law students take it. I'm still finalizing the schedule. If you have questions about it, feel free to email me.
So it's really fun. One question students always ask me is sort of how best to integrate it with your JD. So, and with whatever else you're doing for the summer. So do you have thoughts on that? What do our students usually do with respect to credits here and then also with respect to the rest of their summer?
So people have taken different approaches. In order to take, so if you're getting financial aid for the summer, you have to take at least 6 credits. So some people then take all 6 credits in the environmental law summer session, do them all in that first 3 weeks, and then do like an internship. Some people, because in order to get 6 credits, you have to have some daytime class. Some people have done it where they do sort of the 6 credits and they take mainly night ones and then start working, but have like, take like 1 or 2 of the afternoon ones and just arrange with their internship, like their employer, to sort of only come in the mornings for a week or something. Some people will take like, they'll do 2 or 3 of our courses, or 4 of our courses, and then take ethics. Ethics goes the whole summer. You have to take it. It's 2 credits. It's not super exciting. I don't think it's super exciting.
Nobody thinks it's super exciting.
But everyone has to take it. And so some people will be like, okay, I'm going to take ethics, and then take 4 of our classes.
And the nice thing about having those units over the summer is that then you can have either a lighter semester later where you could be doing an externship full-time somewhere else,
yeah,
or actually go half-time if it works out financially for you. Some people will go half-time in the spring of their 3L year and work half-time because they have those extra units from the summer.
Yeah. And, I mean, it gives you a chance to sort of get specialized things. The classes are really small, so you generally get to know the professor pretty well. So we have people from the World Bank, Department of Interior, law firms, NGOs who all teach, and then sometimes hire our students, or at least give them internships.
The courses vary a little bit year to year, so I usually teach a hydraulic fracturing law and policy class. I'm not doing it this summer, but I'm hoping to again starting next year.
And it's also a good place where if there's like some topic you're interested in that like we don't offer a class on, and you come and you're like, look, I'm really interested in this, and I know 10 other people who are interested in this, we sometimes can make that happen because we have some more flexibility in the summer schedule. I would say also sometimes people who don't need to, if you just want to take a couple credits just to sort of see what the classes are like, I've known people who haven't done the full 6 credits and so just start an internship or start a job or start an externship and do that during the day, and then the classes at night are generally start at 6:30 or 6, and they go from 6 to 8:30 or 6:30 to 9, but it's only a week. Like for a week you have to be here until 9 o'clock at night. But so they do that.
That's available to 1Ls, 2Ls, anyone?
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's open to everyone. There are no prerequisites.
The other thing is, I will say, don't get too daunted, because at least the way I teach it, the actual grading is a lot more lax than the school year grading. So like a 10-page paper, it gives you the opportunity to explore some issue that interests you, and as long as you make a valid effort at it, you're probably going to do pretty well in the class.
Yeah.
So
there is also flexibility in, like, some people are like, oh my gosh, how am I going to take this many exams or write this many papers? And most of the professors are pretty flexible, where if, like, you've actually taken 4 or 5 of the classes in the summer session, and so, like, all of a sudden you have all these papers due on one day where they just give you an extension, or, like, you can arrange to do it elsewhere. Yeah, I would say I am the professor for the trade and environment class. I don't teach most of the modules, but it's graded on the negotiation simulation and like a 5-page paper. So it's generally a pretty lax thing. But you learn a lot, but don't get
too
hanged. Don't get like, oh my gosh, I can't take all these classes.
Any other questions? So I'm really sorry again that you didn't get the original orientation email to tell you how to sign up for the faculty practice group. I'm going to go remedy that right now, I hope. But aside from that, hopefully this is all helpful info. Don't forget to come to our office hours or email any of us with questions.
I do meetings and office hours by email. I don't have a set one, but so if you just want to meet with me or get coffee or do something, just send me an email and we can find a time to meet and do that.